TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. Because your opinion matters. At TNTRadio.live, upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's Soapbox. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Speaking on the issues that impact. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you back. And a great segment of Freddie Ponton before the break. Great analysis. We went right up until the top of the hour there, as you know, but it's such important information. We let Freddie rip on that because go back and listen to that. By the way, everybody, that last segment was absolutely gold by Freddie Ponton. He really formulated the whole landscape of this situation from Operation Warp Speed with Trump to the sort of European rollout. We'll continue discussing this. And of course, we look forward to Freddie's upcoming article on that topic. It's certainly going to be very an eye-opener, I can say for sure. Now, we're going to be joined later in the first hour by Dr. Piers Robinson. Looking forward to this discussion. It's going to be very definitely educational, insightful, as it usually is with Piers. We'll talk about, among other things, the banning of New Dawn magazine in New Zealand. But on this front, there's a few other things that we want to get to first. And I know, Basil, you've been looking at a few things that you want to share with us right now.
Well, I just heard in the headlines there, I think it was a U.S. congressman talking about a sordid story of sleaze and corruption. And I believe he was referring to Hunter Biden's use of classified information with respect to Ukraine. Surprise, surprise. Of course, he could have been referring to any number of things. He could have been referring to the chairman of the Conservative Party, Nadim Zahawi, who looks like he's going to have to go for not paying his taxes properly. Is Rishi Sunak man enough to sack him? But gradually, ex-ministers are briefing against Zahawi. And I think it's only a matter of time before he has to go. But yes, unfortunately, that is the theme of the day, isn't it? A sordid story of sleaze and corruption all around the world. Standards have slipped, Patrick.
Well, you heard about this classified document scandal in America. They found another trove. I believe these are in Joe Biden's, there's his office, his think tank. I didn't know I had a think tank. That was news when that popped up. His house in Delaware, in the garage next to the Corvette, the house that Hunter Biden was renting for, supposedly, according to reports, renting for $50,000 a month. It's a nice way to get money into Pop's pockets, of course. A little bit of money laundering there, some of the Burisma proceeds, perhaps. So more classified documents have popped up. And, of course, we have to ask the question, Basil, how many of these documents have to do with the relationship of the Bidens, Hunter, Joe, and Jim as well, with the Chinese state and with various and sundry nefarious entities in Ukraine? The Ukraine is known as the ATM machine for the Democrats over the last couple of years, maybe the last 10 years. I think everyone was kind of getting rich off that place. You wouldn't believe the scams they're running there. The state issuing bonds laundered through U.S. Capital investment firms. I mean, if you're in the inside, you knew what to get your hands on and where to transfer it. And there were scandals that broke on this, but they've been mostly buried up until now. I think we're beginning to see that this is a cauldron of corruption.
Yes. Well, in most corrupt country in Europe, it was reported as, but prior to the invasion, suddenly all that's gone away. You know, Sam Bankman-Fried has had his hand in there as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He was raising money for the war effort. And give us your donate. We'll do some crypto aid for Ukraine. I mean, can't imagine what that was about. I mean, that sounds like a CIA money laundering operation, to be honest. Easily done.
A war, by the way, which the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists has said has brought its doomsday clock, intended to illustrate existential risks to the world, to 90 seconds to midnight. This is the closest the clock has ever been to midnight since it was first introduced in 1947. This is largely, in inverted commas, because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, they said. Mm-hmm. With Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov adding, the situation as a whole is really alarming, blaming NATO and the US. Part of the alarming developments, escalations on the other side include the Russian Defense Ministry announcing that the frigate, the Admiral Gorshkov, has tested its strike capabilities in the Western Atlantic Ocean. In a statement, the ministry said the frigate had run a computer simulation on hypersonic Zircon missiles. Zircon missiles have a range of 560 miles and can travel at several times the speed of sound, making it very, very difficult to defend against them. The speed of sound is, well, put it this way, that if they could travel several times the speed of sound, you know, they can travel that 560-mile range in a matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So there's not a lot of time to react.
Not a lot of time.
It's not a lot of time to sort of say, oh, maybe we got it wrong. Are you sure they said they what? Is it, was it really, did they really fire towards us, or was that, are you sure?
Bang.
Yeah, that's it. And yeah. Automatic retaliation, right?
And you know, and this is how World War III will start. I mean, this Admiral Gorshkov has only got to go into action once in the Western Atlantic and hit a couple of vessels which the Russians decide are providing material support to Ukraine, and whoops apocalypse. Wasn't that the name of the comedy show, Patrick? Whoops apocalypse.
And or arms manufacturing facility, and in Europe there's many that are supplying weapons into the war theater. I mean, all that stuff becomes fair game at that point. I mean, it's a very dangerous, running a proxy war against a major nuclear power is a very risky business. That's what we're trying to get across to people. I don't think people fully comprehend.
And at the root of it, in a way rather similar with the similar to the Palestine question, is the principle of self-determination. You know, the people of those eastern provinces in the Ukraine do not wish to be governed by Kiev. They've been persecuted by Kiev since Zelensky came to power. Why can we not respect the wishes of the indigenous people of the region? You know, this is never spoken about. It's just endless escalation after escalation.
And that's interesting. That's the flip side of the sovereignty of Ukrainian borders issue, UN Charter. This is the one side of the argument that, and I always repeat this because it's an important point, but those people who are cheerleading for this proxy war are saying, well, Russia has violated the territorial integrity of Ukraine. That's against international law. Putin's war of aggression. Obviously, no context whatsoever as to what brought it up to that point, much less the other side of that coin. The other side of the UN coin is territorial, of territorial integrity, is the right to self-determination.
Yeah.
And sometimes when a state breaks down because it's madly corrupt, it's being puppeteered by foreign powers, propped up with foreign money, it starts engaging in racist policies against its own citizens and starts dividing the country up among ethnicities. At that point, there could be a breakaway movement. There could be secession. It's happened before in history. And of course, if it's in Kosovo, the West will say it's perfectly legitimate.
Oh, not just Kosovo. I mean, all this nonsense about, you know, the rules-based international order and the, you know, respecting borders. I mean, where to begin with the hypocrisy? A meme I shared this week, which gained a certain amount of traction. Joe Biden supported the Iraq war. All totally illegal, of course.
Oh, more than supported. He rallied the vote that got that thing through. There would have been a war without Biden. Did you know that he was the guy? He was the linchpin to all the Democrats. He brought them in.
Right.
Amazing.
And his reward was the top job.
You got it. You got it.
And let's not forget the terrible destruction wrought on that country, the absolute mayhem that ensued. I remember, you know, 04, 05, 06, sectarian violence, people dragged out of their cars and being shot just for being Sunni or Shia, the endless bombings almost every day, sometimes several times a day, in marketplaces, roadside bombs, thousands of innocent people killed and maimed as a result of the sheer hell unleashed for no good reason whatsoever. So, Biden, as you said, cheerled for the Iraq war. Vladimir Putin opposed it. Biden armed ISIS in Syria. Putin destroyed ISIS in Syria. Biden armed Al-Qaeda in Syria. Putin destroyed Al-Qaeda in Syria. Biden supported the destruction of Libya, another entirely illegal act, something, of course, that Putin opposed. Biden is meanwhile arming neo-Nazis in Ukraine, which Putin is destroying. And Biden supports a nuclear first strike policy, which Putin opposes. Now, I should add that I am not a Putin supporter or apologist. There was a poll on Twitter this week. Who do you support, Russia or Ukraine? It's very simple. Neither. I support peace. We must have peace now. I mean, I think, well, unfortunately, we're a long way away from it. The best case scenario we could have at the moment would be some kind of ceasefire along the lines, the battle lines as currently drawn. A ceasefire.
As in North and South Korea.
Exactly. Yeah. Which has lasted for over 70 years. It's not perfect.
Frozen conflict.
Frozen conflict. Right. People stop dying.
Right, right. Well, what's wrong with that? Is that on the table?
Then we go to the negotiating table. You know, like adults.
It's an option.
Who want to avoid nuclear catastrophe and more casualties.
I'm worried, though, because some people, they can't afford to lose. Russia's not going to basically back down, but the West doesn't, they can't afford to lose either. NATO can't afford to lose. That worries me. Because what's next?
Well, the destruction of the current Russian regime, that's the hidden agenda. Isn't it?
Well, that's one of the end games.
Yes.
That's part of the end game. But what if they can't do that? Then what? Is it escalate?
Yeah, exactly.
They want to go up? Well, this is not that far-fetched. Based on what I'm seeing and reading and hearing people, the way people are talking.
The last couple of days have seen a significant escalation in the amount of military hardware and the rhetoric that the West is supplying to Ukraine.
Look, I'm going to take a break here. This is a fascinating conversation we're having with Basil Valentine in studio. Look, this is an important conversation. If we have to hold this off till tomorrow to continue it, otherwise we might ask Piers Robinson, our next guest, to weigh in on this. But we'll take a quick break here with TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We'll be right back after these messages.
You should hear what Dirk Pohlman is talking about.
Maybe you explain to our listeners how you became enemy of the state. Well, maybe not number one, but at least in the top 10 in Germany.
In 2021, for the first time, I went to Donbass. Didn't plan to stay there, but after I've seen what is going on there, so that this Ukrainian army is killing civilians there already for 8 years, I was shocked. And I decided to stay. I opened a Telegram channel and started to tell about the story of Donbass, about the people. After the special operation of Russia began, my channel got pretty popular in Germany because I was the only German on the ground. And Germany was supporting the Ukrainian government from the beginning, so they didn't like what I was doing and started to talk in a very bad way about me in all news and television, and even blocked the bank accounts of not only of myself but of my parents too. And yeah, this is how I became an enemy of Germany. I'm now in Russia and I can't go back because they also opened a criminal case against me.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality.
Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, folks, welcome back. We're in the second hour right now. Second hour, and we're gonna shift gears a little bit. We're going to be joined by a very special guest right now, Dr. Piers Robinson. He's also author of a number of important publications, especially on the subject of propaganda, including The CNN Effect, The Myth of News, Foreign Policy and Intervention, which is still relevant today, and certainly might even come up in this discussion. But he is also working with a number of good organizations, working groups that are exploring these conflicts and the role of the media and the role of the government in propaganda and how this affects the population and forms a consensus to get the population behind any of these conflicts. But we're also going to talk about the issue of censorship, because we'll probably start off with that. And without further ado, I want to welcome Piers to the program. Hello, Piers.
Hi, Pat. Good to be with you.
It's great to be with you as well, Piers. And we'll talk a little bit. We might drift into geopolitics, because there's been some very interesting breaking news, a little bit worrying, in fact, but on the European, NATO, and Ukraine front. But one of the stories that I know that you were following in the last couple of weeks was this huge controversy in New Zealand regarding New Dawn magazine. I think you're familiar with the author of the controversial article, T.J. Coles, who's also written some excellent books, by the way, on deep state operations and false flags and things like this. How did you feel about that issue? Did it surprise you that there was this kind of brigade to go for a print publication that had been on the shelf for decades in that country?
Well, nothing is surprising me at the moment across reportedly liberal democracies. We've seen, obviously, for decades, high levels of propaganda, and censorship is part and parcel of propaganda, right? Propaganda isn't just about promoting certain messages in a positive sense. It's also about shutting down and closing down debate and discussion. So, you know, we've had propaganda and censorship in the West for a long time. The last 2-3 years through the COVID-19 event, it has reached stratospheric levels. And so that we're sort of now seeing, you know, what we have been seeing, whether it's across social media or whether it's, in the case of New Zealand, commercial vendors removing magazines from the shelves and so on. This is all in line with what we have seen across liberal democracies for a long time. So it's no surprise that this is happening. I have lost count. I've lost track of a number of very high-profile people, especially under COVID-19, who've been censored and smeared, for example. All of the scientists who are questioning the COVID-19 response, for example. And this is, you know, there are case studies to build 100 PhDs out of in the coming years on what has been going on over the last few years. So it's no surprise. It's another worrying indicator of how far into the abyss we are in liberal democracies, where we cannot, where we're removing material, and I'm not going to draw the obvious historical comparisons. And there's not much more to say on it than that. I mean, we've been moving into increasing levels of propaganda and censorship for a long time. It has got much worse in the last couple of years. And this is the logical end point. It is I mean, well, maybe we'll come on to that in a second. That's my immediate response. I mean, there are some deeper level philosophical things that one can say about free speech and the importance of it and so on, but maybe we'll come to that in a second.
I think it was interesting that they went for this article by T.J. Coles, where he was, what I read the article, it's not a very long article. There's more footnotes than actual text practically in it, but it was just kind of flagging up some known anomalies regarding the shooter, regarding the crime scene, and things that weren't addressed in the Royal Commission. And you know how this goes. You've studied a lot of this documentation, the Chilcot Report, for instance. You know that with a big major event, in the case of a war or you know, a terrorist attack or an incident, that there are things that aren't going to be addressed or covered properly in the official report. And, you know, nature abhors a vacuum on that. So people will immediately go in to dig deeper on that. That's what whistleblowers do. This is what authors do. It's what academics do. It's what journalists do. Members of the public are doing this now. And it seemed like the New Zealand establishment were a little bit sensitive. They use the excuse, Piers, you probably saw this, that this article could potentially harm the Muslim community who were traumatized in New Zealand. And then we looked at the article. It didn't have any links to the live stream of the shooting. That was kind of a fabricated accusation. And it didn't have much of anything, Piers, in it that seemed very shocking. This isn't atypical, though, is it? This is a very sensitive area for some governments.
Well look, on picking up on this point about harm, you're seeing this term being used. You're seeing it in the online harm legislation, for example. And it's becoming this catch-all phrase which will allow them to censor any issues which powerful actors don't want you to talk about. And, you know, if you're questioning, for example, as I've been involved in looking at the chemical weapons, alleged chemical weapons attacks in Syria, you're rapidly accused of causing harm on the ground or harm to victims and so on. This is a way of just, this is no more, no less than a way of trying to close down people asking perfectly reasonable, rational questions. And as you were saying in this case, look, this is always the way of the world. Events occur. There are official narratives and official claims which are made. And then there are questions which nearly always need to be asked and challenged in relation to that. And part of the principle of free speech, you know, if we go back to John Stuart Mill, you know, remember what he says about, you know, the act of censorship always works upon this kind of the erroneous assumption of infallibility, that the person who's doing the censoring knows that he or she is right to do that. And of course, you can never be absolutely sure that you are right or wrong. Authorities can never be absolutely sure that they are right or wrong in relation to any incident or alleged attack and so on and so forth. And so this is where free speech and freedom of expression comes in. It allows people to raise those questions and to pick up mistakes and errors which might have been made, and also to pick up where there's been deliberate deception or manipulation of investigations and so on. This is what the freedom of expression is all about. It's about allowing people to ask those critical questions, which allows us to hold power to account, and which also, as you were suggesting, allows us to develop better and more accurate understandings of events. And this goes for, you know, whether it's terrorist attacks or any other events, issues that we see. And as soon as we start to censor, we close down that opportunity. And this is something which anybody, you know, academics should know this, right? And politicians should really know it. This is what underpins democracy. This is how you ensure that bad decisions, ensure that power does not become corrupted and so on, or try to ensure that doesn't happen, is by allowing this. And of course, the other sort of flip side or the other part of the defense of freedom of expression from John Stuart Mill is that, you know, it's okay for people to have erroneous ideas, that you allow those to circulate, and that allows to create a greater clash or collision with the truth, and it allows people to better see more, the quality and the accuracy of arguments. So it's okay, even if somebody's analysis or critique is incorrect, for example, of a particular attack or a particular investigation, the process you go through is not to censor that. You allow that to circulate, and it has benefit in its own right. Quite aside from the idea, if you start to close down arguments and analyses and so on, they go underground and you can't subject them to scrutiny. And that's the last thing you want in a purportedly democratic system. So for all of these basic reasons, democratic reasons related to freedom of expression, but also in a sense, academic or scientific reasoning, you allow their all opinions on the table and then you evaluate them. And so on, and all of this censorship, pulling magazines off bookshelves, and so on. This is all taking us down a road where we lose that ability for rational dialogue, rational thinking, and it removes our ability to get closer to the truth. And if truth is something that we value, then we have to ensure we have to have a much more rigorous defense of freedom of expression than we have at the moment. And we should know, people should be crying out at all what's going on in the West at the moment. This is for our countries and for our democracies.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And One example that comes to mind, Piers, is the 1993 World Trade Center bombing in America. And, when you listen to the mainline news stations, and they always put that on their list of Al-Qaeda attacks that have hit America, this is why we need to strengthen our country's defense and counterterrorism and all the rest of it. But the New York Times did some journalism after the fact, obviously helped with the fact they had a whistleblower, and exposed it pretty clearly and definitively that the terrorist cell that was responsible for that attack was being run by the FBI effectively. And this came out a couple of years later, and it was actually on tape. So there's some evidence to back it up. And it's a good example. I know the New York Times doesn't often do journalism these days. They might do the opposite, but they did back then. If they hadn't done that, would we have known about this? Or would it just be a narrative that was set on the day, but usually by the government? And this is, to me, one of the examples I always bring up, that you can change history or how history is read by the work of journalists, by analysts, by academics, members of the public on social media who are doing independent research. It has happened before. Mm. And you probably have some other examples of this as well.
Look, for sure. I mean, we live in a highly propagandized political systems where there's huge concentration of power, but it's not total, right? And you have numerous examples of brave, courageous whistleblowers, and you see this in the case of the OPCW and the alleged chemical weapons attacks in Syria, or tenacious investigative researchers and academics. You see this in relation to 9/11, for example, in the global war on terror. And they do play an important role in holding back or placing some kind of pushback against the propaganda narratives. And it is important, and it does work. And you have much higher levels of awareness of issues surrounding 9/11, I think, now than you had, say, 2, 3, or even 5, 10 years ago. Of course, the big one that's been in the news is, of course, the JFK assassination. And with Tucker Carlson's commentary on and reference to a whistleblower who they'd spoken to, we have ample evidence, whether it's JFK through to 9/11 or through to Epstein, we have ample evidence of serious problems in Western liberal democracies with what some people call the deep state, other people call the permanent state, the intelligence networks and so on. And, the kind of crimes that we've seen committed by Western governments in the war on terror, invading countries, right? Pushing us towards nuclear war, as you were mentioning before in the break, in relation to Ukraine. These are all powerful entities, and the only thing which is going to derail the nefarious policies, and I don't say that lightly, but the nefarious policies that we have seen for so long across liberal democracies is by people, yeah, investigating, challenging, and being able to get that out into the public space. But if we're moving down a road, if New Zealand is going to set the example of pulling publications off bookshelves, and you know the European Union Digital Safety Act will lead, or Digital Services Act will lead to sort of essentially routinized censorship, then we will lose the ability to do that at all. I mean, it's a fight we're in, and so on. But these things, you know, there's been plenty of examples of a successful pushback and so on. And it works and it can work rather. But this is in a sense I get this is the clampdown that we've been seeing. Okay, let me put this as succinctly as possible. The deceptions and the lies which have underpinned, for example, as you know full well, Western foreign policy for a long time, have become so big so increasingly obvious to people around the world that, you know, that I think there's a real chance of their propaganda bubble bursting. And I guess the Nord Stream 2 attack back in September, was it, when that was blown up, and of course they said it was the Russians who did it, no one really believed them, and the sense on the street, on the ground, is that yes, it was clearly the Americans who carried out that attack on a piece of German infrastructure and so on. These are huge lies, you know, this is bigger than the Gulf of Tonkin lie in Vietnam and so on, but they're becoming increasingly obvious to an increasing number of people, and some of that's because of the hard work of investigative journalists, independent journalists, etc., outside of the mainstream. But some of it's to do with the fact that these lies have just become so big, so bloated, that I think that the point of untenability is being reached at the moment.
Yeah, it's too big to manage. I'm with Basil Valentine, who's writing Shotgun. We're here in studio, Piers, and I think he's got a question for you on this. Here we go, Basil.
Hi, Piers.
Hi, Basil.
I think people have become somewhat desensitized to these lies. I think people have become immune to them. The news agenda moves so fast with so many bizarre stories these days. I think people allow them to wash over with a bit of a shrug almost, you know. I mean, as you said, Tucker's revelation last week about the CIA's collusion, not only in Kennedy's assassination, but the subsequent destruction of the Nixon presidency, really should have been headline news on every major network. So we've got a multi-pronged attach to propaganda, which is A, what is allowed to be said, and B, that which is memory hold, either immediately or completely. But the third prong I want to draw attention to is altogether different, but has the same chilling effect, which is the cancellation of the No to NATO event at Conway Hall next month. Claire Daly and Mick Wallace, two Irish MEPs who speak out so eloquently in that chamber, as well as the former MP Chris Williamson, George Galloway, and others, were due to speak. And it's been cancelled after the organizers at Conway Hall itself could no longer ensure the safety of our building and our staff on and offline. Now, one wonders, with an event like that, we don't know who was making the threats and intimidation, but whether or not it's coming from the same deep state actors that want to ban New Dawn magazine and want to narrow the acceptable opinion corridor further.
Yeah, those are very good points. I mean, quickly on the first one, yeah, I mean, the game that's being played is to misdirect and to dazzle people as much as possible, which is probably why we're seeing so much of Prince Harry at the moment in the mainstream media and so on. And there is this kind of sense of a rolling thunder of these kind of events which are being propagandized and so on. But in all of that, look at what's happening certainly in the UK and America, but also across Europe. Look at what's happening in relation to the question of of COVID-19 and the injections, and before this the lockdown, but now very much focuses on injections. You're seeing a groundswell of people waking up to the fact that there's been deception and manipulation in relation to that, and quite aside from all the serious questions, which I won't speak about, in relation to that, you know, that is palpable. And there's a protest outside the BBC, I understand, at the weekend, and large numbers of people shouting shame at the BBC.
Yes, one of the most heartening things I've seen in a long time.
Yes, yeah, so there is a groundswell at the moment, I think, and so, you know, by no means are we just going to revert, I think, to, you know, where we were 2 or 3 years ago. I think something fundamental has changed here. Look at the kind of figures in terms of people's trust in the mainstream media in the US, the Pew studies, but also in the UK. I mean, it's flatlining. It really is.
Yeah.
And so on. So I think that there's a lot of turbulence in the machine now, and this is going to be very interesting to see where this goes. But I don't think the elites and the establishments, that their position is tenable anymore at this point in time. But that's why, coming on to the example you just gave of the No to NATO event, which is struggling to find somebody. And I seem to remember, Pat, a few years back, we had the same problem with Media on Trial, didn't we?
We did, yeah. Same exact situation, yeah.
And it raises a question about who is called.
Right.
After the kind of skimming of the surface that we've seen with the Twitter files, I mean, so now it's known, it's out in the open, that the intelligence, FBI and so on, interacting with social media to determine the agenda, etc. So then this move that's happening, and so the idea that they're messing around with people who are trying to organize and create public events would be of no surprise whatsoever. But it shows how desperate they have become. That, you know, a few years back ago, Pat, is you and I and Vanessa and Peter Ford struggling with Media on Trial to find a venue because we were being shut down. Just a small group of pretty unknown academic and an independent journalist. They couldn't even tolerate, you know, us speaking to maybe 200 or 300 people.
Yeah.
And so on. This is a sign of desperation on their part that they're having to go to these lengths. And I'm betting that Claire and Mick and David and Chris and the others and George involved in No to NATO, I'm hazarding a guess, they'll get to pull off that event one way or the other somewhere. As we were able to, I seem to remember, Pat.
That was quite a task to find a venue, but we ended up having in a parking lot under a marquee behind a mosque in Leeds, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Indeed.
By the end.
That's right.
But yeah, I hope they do find a venue. Look, let's take a quick station break here with TNT Today's News Talk. I'm talking to Piers Robinson and Basil Valentine about a very, very important topic. We're talking about propaganda, freedom of speech, censorship, and what that means in 2023. Let's take a break here, and we'll see you on the other side.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
This is pure speculation, okay? But there's a very interesting article. A couple of meteorologists from China have discovered that the Earth's core has stopped and may be reversing direction. Now, that is really interesting because it also says a surprising finding might solve long-standing mysteries about climate and geological phenomena. Now, yours truly has been opining that the increase in seismic activity over the last 30 to 40 years is leading to a rapid warming of the oceans, relatively speaking, which is probably the prime driver for the warming of the atmosphere. We all know if the oceans get warm, the air is going to get warm above it, or warmer. But what's interesting about this also is the last time this happened was 60 to 70 years ago. And it was during that time the Earth was quite cold. And one has to wonder, well, if it was reversing then, if that reversal may have something to do with the warming. I don't know. But it is interesting that the authors say that the surprising finding might solve long-standing mysteries about climate and geological phenomena. And when they say climate like that, Well, that's pretty darn impressive because nobody really wants to attribute anything in climate to nature. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi. I went a little long here, but I'm still going to ask you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. We're in the final segment of the final hour here at TNT Today's News Talk. I'm joined on the line right now with Dr. Piers Robinson and also in studio with Basil Valentine. And I want to go back to you, Piers. Piers, now, a few months ago, a number of months ago, we were talking about the propaganda ecosystem, if you will, that surrounds this conflict, this proxy war between NATO and Russia. And I wanted to just revisit that with you. Things have developed significantly since then, although some of the things are still the same. But, you know, the level of escalation to me is quite shocking. And I get the boiling frog metaphor kind of comes in here. You know, the U.S. now saying they're going to send Abrams tank division into Ukraine, but they're saying it's not an escalation. It's not escalation. The amount of effort into the propaganda war on this, I've never seen anything like this. And we have seen some incredible things over the years. But this is another level. Would you agree? And how is this different from some of the past conflicts or major events that required incredible coordination on messaging and things like this?
Well, I agree with you that this is, you know, we're in an alarming situation at the moment in relation to the Ukraine conflict and NATO and NATO's role in this and the push for war. I mean, I think it's useful looking at this historically, and I'm actually reading The Unspeakable on the JFK book at the moment, and sort of going back to the 60s and so on. And, you know, the Russia as the ultimate enemy, you know, is deeply rooted there in the psyche of the Western establishment. And now if you sort of fast forward and you look at the global war on terror, and you've seen a whole series of regime change conflicts initiated under the cover of that controversial event. And that got us to about sort of 2014, with Russia kind of like sort of running alongside to some extent in relation to that. But then you saw a sharp division emerging again. You had the situation in Ukraine strengthening. And then you're seeing this slow build-up on the part of the West to push to a point of conflict with Russia, pushing it to a red line in relation to the Ukraine. And that was fairly obvious that was occurring by 2015. And so what this seems to me that we have is that, you know, to the extent that, you know, the permanent war machine, the military-industrial complex, that component of the elite establishments across the West were pushing for the regime change wars under the cover of 9/11, you know, they've now segued onto bypassing Iran, it seems somewhat, onto, you know, conflict with Russia. And I think you alluded to the point that sort of we're in dangerous territory. People seem to not be paying enough attention. And I think there might be some truth to that we're in a situation where that power block that has failed to achieve what it wanted to achieve in Syria, for example, is operating in a context where there's clearly a dramatic shift in power away from the West and to other major actors in the international system are still rolling the dice. And this time they're rolling the dice with Russia. And so that takes us, this is why I started with JFK and the Cold War. Of course, JFK was and Khrushchev were acutely worried, and particularly JFK, about the dangers of nuclear conflict. And this drove his presidency up to the point at which he's assassinated, course. And that should be that's a reminder of how dangerous this situation is. NATO is pushing into a potential conflict, direct conflict with Russia over the Ukraine. It's clearly been, we don't have to go over the historical backdrop of this. NATO has been expanding and pushing to the point where it was going to be inevitable that Russia would feel the need to respond, let alone from what we've seen going on in Ukraine for the last 6-7 years. And this is an potentially incredibly dangerous situation. Russia is an extremely powerful country. It is not Iraq, when we invaded Iraq back in 2003, a country which had been under sanctions for 10 years and its military was decimated. That was, it was in a sense, in strict military terms, a walkover in terms of invading the country. Although, of course, after that, it turned very bad for the occupation forces. But this is a conflict which could very rapidly, as you suggested, escalate. And even if this kind of elite cabal, this military industrial complex is kind of, they're rolling the dice and thinking, well, we can get a win here at this point of declining Western power. The risks of unintended consequences, the risk of mistakes, etc., are ever present in this kind of situation, and it is alarming. And it is, in one sense, I'm hoping this is the final roll of the dice by the military industrial complex, part of the establishment in the West, and that at some point in all this, they will give up the ghost, right? They will realize that the West's position in the world is significantly changed, and it must learn to accommodate itself to a different
mm-hmm. Yes.
Hold being up. So belligerent. The kind of turning point you had with Suez and the British foreign policy establishment, when it realized that during the Suez crisis that it could not hold on to the empire. And so they changed course, and you went to the period of decolonization. I'm sort of hoping, is there going to be that kind of moment with the establishment in the West? At the moment, they're just chomping at the bit for more war, sending tanks and so on, which is incredibly dangerous. But at some point, they have to wake up and smell the coffee, you would hope.
No, 100%. It's to me, I'm like, what's the next level of escalation that's going to be not an escalation? It's like, oh, this is an escalation, but it's an escalation. There's been a whole series of these things, one after another. And, Germany being pressured to, Parliament last week said, no, we're not sending tanks, not sending Leopards. And all of a sudden the pressure came. The hairdryer treatment over the phone, probably from Washington. You're going to send those tanks or else, that kind of thing. So, and then Germany basically capitulates yesterday, and they're going to send the tanks. So it's like, and then Boris is also, the British are imposing themselves. Boris wants to be special envoy. And again, it's about lobbying to all the other NATO partners. We need to send more weapons. You got to pony up with more money. And so forth. And I'm like, well, at some point, this is going to reach the point where there's so much invested that one side, the NATO side, probably is not going to want to back down for fear of losing face and legitimacy. And then you got a political crisis, really, that's underpinning a potential geopolitical crisis. And that worries me because I don't like I don't trust politics quickly. Basil wants to weigh in on this.
Well just that, there is no intelligent, wise conversation about the sense of this war. The people speaking or due to speak at the No to NATO, No to War event are not seen or heard on the mainstream propaganda services. It is one-way traffic relentlessly in the same direction, which is for not just ever greater escalation of the war itself, more money, more Ukraine to the world's current number one grifter, Zelensky, but also, as we've seen, the demonization of Russia and Russians over racism. I've just seen this afternoon that Russians have been detained by security personnel at the Australian Open tennis in Melbourne for wearing t-shirts emblazoned with Russian flags. And, we've had Tchaikovsky concerts cancelled, all sorts of other total, complete and utter nonsense, which has no place in a liberal society.
Mm. Yeah, it's really important as well, I think, to keep in mind this, that what we've seen during COVID-19 with the entire sort of technocratic and the decline in democracy and so on, and the authoritarianism, you know, that has emanated from, you know, power blocks which can be located in the Western elite establishment. And you know, that's been pushed obviously during COVID-19 and the kind of decline in democracy that we've seen. At the same time, we have, you know, as it were, an overlap, or perhaps it's the same block or group, but certainly an overlapping group with the military industrial complex, who are pushing for more war. But this is the same elite block, ultimately rooted in powerful institutions in the West, which have become globalized over time, underpinned, rooted in big finance and the economics and so on. But these are the same actors. And one of the problems that we're having at the moment is that the left and the right keep on allowing themselves to get divided in the face of this. So you have the right have been very good on COVID, yeah, and picking up on the problems there. Yep. But they're terrible on picking up on the belligerents, the military industrial complex, etc. The left have been very good or much better at challenging the militarism and so on, but they've been terrible on COVID-19. And both sides are saying, are failing to recognize that actually this is the same beast. This is the same problem that we have. This is a block who have obtained significant power. Whether it's, you know, people refer to, you know, big corporations, military industrial complex, world economic forum, global governance structures, and so on. Well, all of these, as far as I can see, from where I'm sitting, are rooted in powerful organizations within the Western establishment. And they're playing, in a sense, a card of war is being played, a card of the virus is being played, and a lot of that has been about control. But this is an establishment which is trying to hold on to control and power. This is my guess, trying to hold on to its position of power and resources at a point where they know that the scene is changing globally, that there's going to be a very different world that we're moving into. And this is a dangerous beast, this power block that we have, whether it's driving the COVID-19 response or driving the war in Ukraine, are a dangerous power block, precisely because they are struggling to hold on to in a context where situation is changing. And who knows what cards might be played, and who knows what cards they might risk playing in relation to the Ukraine and so on. And I think it's very important for people to, you know, it's about getting beyond this left-right kind of perception and so on, and recognizing that the really big problem we have in the West is with a profoundly corrupted political establishment. And I'll defer back to the JFK information coming out and Tucker Carlson's comment. And of course, Robert Kennedy Jr. Made very clear, didn't he, that he believed that his uncle had been assassinated by the CIA. Now, you know, if that is the historical truth of the matter, then that should be a wake up for everyone about how big a problem we have in the West. If that is what transpired, if Robert Kennedy is correct, if Tucker Carlson's hunch is correct, then that should really be a wake up call to everybody in the West, across all the liberal democracies, that there's something rotten, deeply rotten, and might be part of the explanation for why we find ourselves in this incredibly dangerous and, you know, sometimes it seems this insane world that we've been living in for the last few years, where we have segued from virus panic through to now sending tanks into the Ukraine to take on the Russians.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing about JFK, of course, being that the corporate media, almost in unison with the sole exception of Tucker, although they try and avoid the subject as much as possible, continue to promote the Oswald fiction with full vigor, even though there is absolutely no way he could possibly have inflicted the wounds on the president that brought about his death. So, I mean, it's worth remembering that up until this day, they're still talking the Oswald nonsense. You know, there's been no wider recognition. That's my point. So, you know, these lies are not just historical. They continue right to this day. The other point I wanted to make quickly is with regards to the left and anti-war, it's the Democrats that have now become the party of continuous war. The only real opposition to war coming from anywhere is from the sort of, if you like, alt freedom caucus on the right. Trump has said there wouldn't have been this war in Ukraine if he had remained in power. And we had Paul Mason marching with trade unionists in support of the war a few months ago, you know. So we've got this dreadful sort of inverted left, which is not the true left of Corbyn, Ben, and the CND and the Peace Brigade, you know.
You're right. Yeah, I agree. That's a legitimate criticism of my point. I think I differentiate between the kind of the anti-war left, the anti-imperialist left, who have been good on the militarism, but not COVID-19. But then, as you say, there's the co-opted left, there's the New Labour, et cetera, who are just part of the establishment.
Exactly.
And again, and the key thing is that you've got people on the left and the right who have managed to separate themselves from the establishment bloc, and then there's the left and the right who form part of the elite bloc.
Yeah,
no, that's all good points, and we're just cracking the surface of this this discussion. But I want a big thank you to Piers Robinson. Much appreciated, Piers.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Basil.
And big thank you to Basil, of course.
Thank you, Patrick,
for joining us here, Shotgun. And also a big thank you to our guest in the first hour, Freddie Ponton, as well. That's all for today, folks. We'll be back tomorrow with more and look forward to that. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen, signing out. Next up, the Jesse Zurowell Show after the top of the hour news headlines.